Welcome to Design Oracles. We are here to pontificate, evangelize, and educate you on residential interior design and architecture.
I'm Amity Worrell, interior designer of Amity Worrell and Company.
And I'm Diane Kett, architect of DK Studio.
Hello, Diane. How are you today?
Hi, I'm good. I'm very excited.
Yes.
This is our fourth season.
Yes, it's very exciting. So this season, we came up with a catchy phrase to sort of encompass our overarching theme for the season. Tell us what that is, Diane.
So we came up with a disciplined approach, and basically it's talking about the discipline, various disciplines that all have a different approach to the design view,
yeah,
or the design study.
And problem solving. And so to begin with, thinking about what we mean when we say discipline is a couple of different ways that that word has meaning. A branch of knowledge, typically one studied in higher education. So for me, it would be interior design. And the study of interior design, for Diane, it would be architecture.
Mm-hmm.
And so to kind of branch out this season and bring in other ways of thinking, other disciplines, we thought that was a good theme to be able to bring in people who think about things and solve problems from the lens of their discipline. So for an example, just because I think it's probably helpful to kind of have further explanation of what we mean is, you know, we were talking about it and I was thinking, well, like, how does each different branch of thinking and higher education solve problems? So an example would be, say you've got this little town, right? And it has problems with a stoplight or a corner where a lot of accidents happen. And an engineer would come in to solve that problem. And she might look at the sight lines at a particular corner or the slope of a road, or, you know, look at viewing speed issues and how those are affected by the built world there. And then a sociologist might come in and they would look at it and consider the trends that have been happening in the town with population. Maybe that's growing and there's growth. Or that might change how people relate to each other.
An urban planner might come in and talk about the scale of the pedestrian to the street and
right. What's
happening. And as far as engineers involved with that, I mean, you're going to have maybe a geotech engineer, you'll have a civil engineer, you'll have a traffic engineer.
Exactly.
So there's a lot of disciplines just in that one.
Within that one encompassing discipline, right?
Challenge.
Or way
yeah.
of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Economist might look at how people... how the economy of the town might change if you put a stoplight in. Is that going to cause people to stop going to a certain direction for making a left turn versus a right turn? And so it's really a landscape architect might come in and...
Oh, yeah, for sure. We need some trees and plants
right around
there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and sometimes they'll think of ways to, like, slow cars down by making beautiful views for them to see, or curves in the road. And so this is just an example to sort of explain what it is we'll be talking about this season, about how all these different people come into, and we're relating it, of course, to architecture and interior design for residences. So thinking about how I as an interior designer solve a problem and how that's different than an architect solves a problem or an engineer, et cetera.
Yeah, so with each discipline, they seek to kind of explain, control, predict kind of natural or social phenomena to then help solve that problem. And I think each discipline kind of enjoys exploring that human condition or expressing an idea or even a feeling, depending on which discipline it is, about how you go about approaching that. And of course, as we know, in architecture and interior design, which we've talked about, we definitely, especially working in people's houses, are all about the feeling and ideas and a whole bunch of factors. And then we also bring in other disciplines to help us. Now, some of these larger, you know, more when you get to like urban planning, such as you're saying, a traffic stop, that involves a whole lot more people. and disciplines mm-hmm. when you're working on something like that.
Yeah, and it can get very macro and micro. So we can talk about it in a big, grand kind of way. Like the architect might think first about, you know, and I'll let Diane talk about this. I won't do her part, but about how structure feels on the lot. And then she might think about how that interior, how that's going to relate to the interior in a very grand macro way, right? Is that the, and then micro, it might be how it feels for that person individually in that space and their history and their background and their lived experience. And so it's interesting because it's a big thing that can get very large and kind of overarching, and it can get very small. So there's a lot of density involved in it.
Right.
So I think I will talk a little bit about how the way I use the discipline of interior design to kind of solve the problems of a client, because that's really what Diane and I are both doing, is solving problems for people and what they need, what they're trying to achieve. I think about who the players are. Is it a partnership, a husband and a wife, a family, a single person? And then the people that I bring in help me solve those problems, whether it's a painter or a wallpaper installer or a cabinet installer. We start with that larger piece of it, working with the architect and the client, and then we start getting more. It's iterations of coming down into like the micro level of materiality.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to say one other thing about the discipline word, because we've talked on this podcast about codes.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And rules.
That's a discipline.
Yeah.
In a different word.
Meaning. Yeah. And it's exactly so. I feel like those structures, the discipline of staying within those structures of like, how big does a window need to be? How far apart do cabinets need to be from one another? These are like frameworks, wouldn't you call them, that like establish a groundwork for us to play within. And, that's good and bad. Like, we have to follow these rules. So that's another discipline. And it's funny because, sometimes we think of discipline, you think of scolding. And, so I think of that too. It's like, right. I'm going to get in trouble if I don't follow this rule or this guideline, excuse me.
Right. So
do you want to go first?
I was going to say, do you want me to talk about architecture?
Yeah, why don't you, and then I'll go next.
Okay, so a lot of times, I guess how we approach as far as the discipline of architecture is, when I walk into a space, I kind of survey the whole space. I notice everything that's going on. I kind of look. Let's say I'm doing a new house for you and I want to meet you at your old house because I want to maybe look at how you live. And then I want to ask you questions about how you live and what works for you and what doesn't. Or if I'm doing a remodel or addition, I want to look at your house and do all those same things. The other thing I want is to see some images of maybe things you like, even if it's just one or two images. But my first plan is to just do a big survey. It's not necessarily that I'm writing stuff down or drawing something, but in my head, I'm doing this massive survey. It's almost like this computer is taking in all this information and just putting it in all these file folders in my brain. And then I can walk away with all that information and then start to make my approach of how I'm going to solve the design challenge to bring them what they just told me, what I just surveyed. Because a lot of times while you're talking to me, I'm also looking at things and seeing what's going on around you.
It's interesting that you say that too, because do you find sometimes that maybe this is something that comes up with me, that what the client thinks is the problem that they're trying to solve, it might actually be something else that you're noticing with your eye in the space? Or
yeah,
maybe they say, we don't spend time in this room.
Yeah.
We don't know why, but,
right?
And then they want to correct it in some way that you might think is maybe not the way that's going to really solve the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of times they'll say, "Well, we love to entertain, but we have no space to entertain." And so, like, if I'm doing a new house, then we want to design it so that it flows really well. another thing that people don't always think about, but that I'm always thinking about when you lay out the kitchen, is that whoever is the chef or cook, and if there's any sous chefs, that none of, if you're entertaining, your guests are not getting in your way, getting to the refrigerator to get a drink, or it, the kitchen becomes, you know, is the way the circulation is set up, that no one's walking through that area so that that chef isn't bothered while they're cooking. Also, if they do a lot of outdoor cooking, and how close is it to the kitchen, and to connect those two, or, you know, the ease of that transition. So thinking about how the spaces all connect to each other, how it's going to support you best. I just had, I have a new client on a house we're working on, and they wanted to call some references. So I gave them a whole bunch of references. Luckily, I have a lot of raving fans. And they called them all, and I had forgotten that two of them had had architects before. They'd been through two or three, and how they said how those other architects just weren't listening, weren't giving them the vision they want, and how I really listen and pay attention. And while I don't like to do the same design over and over because I would get bored, and I love all different kinds of architectural styles, how I really work to design it for you, because I always want to make sure that that house is going to work best for you, to support you and your family or whoever's living in the space. So that's kind of my disciplined approach, mm-hmm. is to really study all of those things about you and your family and what's happening. And I'm pretty intuitive as well. So a lot of times I've got, you know, all my antennas out, picking up stuff that you might not even realize.
It's interesting that you say that, because I watch a lot of those design shows. And
God, you do?
Yeah. I live it. I love it. But they call that the client brief at the beginning, right? Like, what is the client brief? What is the problem being laid out for you to solve? And it is always interesting, because when there are multiple people working in that discipline trying to solve it, they all have different solutions for it. Mm-hmm. And for me, sometimes, I don't know if this is true for you, we have to have that framework to be able to follow along these steps, to follow along to get to the answers. But we're all in this discipline. There's an architect who's going to have a totally different answer than you. Do you find that to be true? And then I'm asked sometimes to come up with different ideas for that same client to take what it is they're trying to solve, and then you solve it for them. And then they say, well, they ask a question and challenge you, and then what about this? So do you find that to be true, that people push you to go different directions with things?
Sometimes. I mean, I always do two different options in the beginning, because I like to look at things in different ways, how to solve a problem. It could be this way or that way. Sometimes I might even come up with a third one. But usually I try to look at two different options. And, you know, from that, also, once people see something, then they're able to respond to something, because we do this all the time, but they don't. So then they see something, and then they can respond to it. Typically, it's usually works really well. Sometimes they're like, oh, you know what? I decided I wanted, you know, they've come up with something else they want. They want a whole nother scullery. And before it was just a small pantry. You know, sometimes they may just make bigger changes like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it's often giving them a couple options to then have a response to, and then that's how we come up with the best solution in the end.
And it's a conversation, a back and forth conversation.
Yeah, and it's definitely fluid. Some people are always like, how many changes do I get to make? And, you know, I'm always like, no, there's going to be changes the whole way. I mean, hopefully we're not tearing down a wall and moving it, but, you know, there are just, it's fluid. We're human. We're full of emotions. What is it? 90% of our body's water or something. So, you know, we're just all fluid, and things, you have to be open to all that with the changes.
Yeah. And everybody has a different comfort level with that, I think. So I had a client yesterday say an option came up when we were in the field looking at something, and they said, oh, I didn't know that could still change. I didn't know that was still an option to change. There was a change that could be made. Mm-hmm. And so that reminds me from what you're saying that, yes, there's, you know, you always ask, because there could be a change that could be made. And the way that we know that that can happen is from studying what it is that we do, and the science of what that we do, and the builder has a certain approach. And sometimes maybe Diane and I have something we want to change because we see it built, and we don't maybe yet know if it can be changed or what all of the complications might be involved in making that change, whether it's like, can we take this cabinet out and change this cabinet or alter this part of the design? So we need all those other disciplines and other people to come in and tell us, yes, this can change or this can't, and here's why. So I like to always tell clients and guide clients that it's, you know, always ask, always mm-hmm. ask those questions.
Mm-hmm. All right, so tell us about your approach with interior design.
Yeah, I gave this some thought. I was trying to figure out a framework to that I work within, because sometimes it becomes so intuitive, like you're talking about, you're taking notes and you're looking around when mm-hmm. you're first talking to a client. So it's similar. So it's hard to break down what happens so naturally and internally. But one thing I try to focus on first is finding within each project and also within each room some sort of something to emphasize, an emphasis. So within a space, it might be, if the room is a room where the family's going together, the leading sort of emphasis might be comfort in that space. Or maybe it's view. You know, I've walked into these houses where, you know, the view is incredible and all of the furniture is facing the television instead right. of the glass wall. So emphasis is a word that I kind of think, well, what am I emphasizing here? Maybe sometimes it's just this incredibly, like maybe the ceiling is really low in that space. And so I want to emphasize the expansiveness of the width of the room. So I think about what to emphasize, what to organize things around. If it's a kitchen, makes me think of organizing things around the social interaction that happens typically in contemporary life in kitchens. So I might emphasize comfort and flow in there, but I think, okay, I have to structure this somehow. I'm structuring it around the personality of the person, the mood of the room, the mood that they want to create. And then that, you know, what am I emphasizing? And then I try to focus on also, after emphasis, variety. So I want to make sure that this space is not flat, that it has variety in tones, colors, textures, mm-hmm. and even in, frankly, quality of furniture levels. Like if everything is very expensive and luxurious and lush, and then it's all going to feel too even and flat.
Right, yeah.
Right? So you want variety.
Unless there's some people that want it like that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some spaces that are...
True, yeah. But, you know, we always joke in my firm that we're talking about, you know, if everything is special, nothing special.
Right.
So you kind of want something that's like, oh, this old thing. Or anyway, we do. That's one thing I like to do is try to focus on variety of textures and quality levels. And maybe even it's some pieces that are historic to the family, and then some pieces that are brand spanking new, you know, mm-hmm. kind of thing. Okay, and then you want variety, but you also want unity. So you want cohesion and unity in the space. So while focusing on variety, I have to consider that the space probably, or I want the space to feel like it belongs together.
Mm-hmm.
Each room belongs with each other room. And they all belong to the client and the way they live. So you don't want to, it's not Disneyland, right? You don't want to walk into one room and go, oh, this is where the princess lives. All and right. then you walk into another, or maybe you do when you have a kid. But that's typically not the case. You want unity, highs and lows and evenness. And then, of course, you would think I would start with this, but I don't necessarily, functionality. So you've got to make sure within this emphasis and variety and unity that there is function. So that's a lot of times, say it's a laundry room, you know, you want it to feel bright and cheery because it's not maybe that exciting to do laundry. But you've got to make sure that the surfaces are functional and that the space is wide enough for you to wheel in your mm-hmm. cart and whatever it is. You've got a place to fold if that's how that client wants to use that space.
And I would say sometimes I've noticed where we've got people that really don't care as much about the function. They want to make sure it just looks beautiful.
Yes.
So we have to be disciplined about that. And then I've had other clients where it's fully functional. They don't care that it looks ugly, and they want the, you know, their bins over here and this there. And go the complete opposite extreme.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's true that...
And I do think we spend most of our time talking about laundry rooms.
We spend a lot of time talking about laundry rooms. And oh, I love a good laundry room.
Thank you for listening to Design Oracles with Amity Worrell, owner of Amity Worrell & Company, and Diane Kett, owner of DK Studio. Thank you for listening to Design Oracles with Amity Worrell, owner of Amity Worrell & Company, and Diane Kett, owner of DK Studio.